All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Philip Drew, Administrator, and our next guest is Lawrence M. Vance. He's a publisher, author, freelance writer, book dealer, and teacher of Greek at Pensacola Bible Institute in Florida. He wrote a great article last week, or maybe it was the week before that, I think it was last week, on LouRockwell.com called 8 Facts About Iraq. And since we live in a country that is occupying that country after invading it right now, and since you and me included, the American people, don't know a thing about Iraq, I thought it would be great to bring on someone who actually can teach us a little bit of the history of that country and exactly what is going on there, as opposed to what we see every day on TV. So, welcome to the show, Mr. Vance.
Good afternoon.
It's very good to have you on.
Thank you.
I'm not exactly sure where I want to start this thing. I think I want to talk about you a little bit. I noticed on your website that you're the author of 6 books, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they're all about Christianity, right?
Yes, you could say that.
That's one of the reasons, at least, that I decided that you would be a really good guest to have on, because there's so much, I guess, especially in mass media, where all good conservative Christians love George Bush and support whatever he does, no matter what. And I thought it might be good for a change to bring on a conservative Christian who can maybe explain some things from a different point of view.
Well, I'm definitely not one of those people that believes everything George Bush says.
Oh, well, I gathered that from the article. That's obviously the case. Now, your first point in this article was that Britain created the country of Iraq, right?
Correct. In 1920, after World War One, and this is something people just don't think about the consequences of World War One. They don't study history. They don't study World War One and the terrible thing with Wilson sending our troops over there and getting involved in European wars, contrary to the advice of George Washington, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah, there were far-reaching consequences of World War One all over the world, and in fact, I think the consequences of World War One in the Middle East are often overlooked, whereas, you know, it might be pretty clear to people that the Nazis were the direct result of World War One and the Soviet Union.
Right.
A lot of people don't think about the consequences of World War One in the Middle East. How did it shape up there?
Well, the Ottoman Empire ruled for so long, and then they were defeated in World War One when Turkey sided with the Central Powers. So the victors naturally wanted to just divide the spoils, the French and the British, and that's exactly what they did. And, of course, the British and French meddle in other countries just like we do and have suffered the consequences as well. If you think of the French in Vietnam as well as in the Middle East. So the whole thing is just a disaster when you meddle in other countries, whether it's the U.S. or any other country that tries to tell other people how they should govern themselves and run their lives.
Well, at least back then they called it empire. They weren't beating
around. Yeah, at least they were a little more honest back then. Whereas we have more of an empire now than we've ever had before. I was just checking today, and we now have troops in 138 countries around the world, including 183,000 in Iraq right now.
So when Britain came and drew this border, was it completely arbitrary, or were the three different groups within what's now Iraq already sort of combined under the Ottoman Empire in a way that would make it obvious to go ahead and draw the border the way they did? Or,
well, what happens is when these borders are drawn, they're usually not drawn in accordance with the groups that are there, and we see this especially in Africa, where you still have all these warring factions because borders have been drawn arbitrarily, not taking into account the populace, and of course that just causes all kinds of problems.
Well, right. Now we have the Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shia all stuck within this one artificial nation.
Right. And, of course, you know how the powers that be feel about countries breaking away. I mean, look what happened with the Southern Confederacy. So they often try to force people together instead of let them break apart on their own.
Well, yeah, we'd have a serious problem if, say, for example, in the north they tried to create Kurdistan, because then there's a whole population of Kurds in Turkey that would want to split off and join them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our alliance with Turkey to worry about.
Yeah, see, that's an entangling alliance, warned against by Washington and Jefferson. We shouldn't have these alliances with any of these countries, and we wouldn't have to worry about offending this country or offending that country. This instance in Iraq right now is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we still have troops in Japan, and I was just looking up the figure. We have 40,000 troops in Japan right now. And they've been there since 1945. I think that's a little ridiculous, in my opinion. And South Korea, we still have 41,000 troops.
You also point out in your article that this regime change in Iraq is actually our third regime change there. Is that true?
That's what I discovered. I mean, I don't profess to be an expert on Middle Eastern history by any means, but these are just basic facts that I was able to uncover, some of them that I didn't know until I did some research. And we have had a history of meddling in Iraq for 30 or 40 years. And, of course, I'm sure you're aware that Saddam Hussein was our friend at one time because we were mad at Iran. So this thing in Iraq has really been going on a lot longer than most people think.
Right. You even say in your article that our relationship with Hussein personally goes back to the late 1950s.
Yes, and recently it's been uncovered some dangerous connections with Rumsfeld and Saddam Hussein in the 80s. I've seen pictures of them shaking hands, and Saddam was our good buddy. So this is going to prove quite embarrassing to the United States should Saddam Hussein ever be allowed to speak out, which he probably will be kept under lock and key and not given that opportunity.
I really am on pins and needles about the Hussein trial. I wonder how exactly that's going to turn out, because, like you say, I mean, he could just get up there and testify, well, yeah, at a time we had chemical weapons, we bought them all from the United States.
Correct, and most people don't realize that. They've been convinced that Saddam Hussein is another Adolf Hitler, and yet we are partly to blame for the power he was able to build up in Iraq.
Well, and to be fair, Hitler had a navy and an air force and an army.
Right. I think I point out in the article, Saddam Hussein didn't have a navy, and he had a very weakened army from the first Gulf War. Here it is. The gross national product of Iraq was not even 15% of the state of Washington. So to say that a country like Iraq was a threat to the United States is just incredible. Their army was considerably weaker than during the first Persian Gulf War. No navy, no air force. Our sanctions destroyed their economy, and that's been documented over the past few years. So we've created Saddam Hussein. And, of course, the words of the Founding Fathers, again, have gone unheeded. It was John Quincy Adams who said that America goes not abroad seeking monsters to destroy. And that's exactly what we've done. We create monsters, and then we have to rise up and go destroy them.
You also point out that compared to its neighbors, Iraq was actually one of the most liberal states in the entire region.
Right. If you were to go to Iran or Syria or Saudi Arabia as a Christian today and try to carry a Bible or practice your faith, you'd be in a lot of trouble. It'd be illegal. If you're a Muslim in those countries, you can't convert to Christianity. You'll be killed. So Iraq, compared to those countries, it was a liberal Muslim state. Now, it was not a state with freedom like the United States by any means, But compared with some of those other Muslim countries, it was certainly a tremendous difference.
So all religions were welcome in Iraq then?
Well, I wouldn't say they were all welcome, but they were tolerated. And if you go to Saudi Arabia, they tolerate one religion, and that's Islam. And there's no toleration of any other religion.
There also seems to be some confusion still. I don't know how. I mean, it seems ridiculous to me, but people still believe that Iraq is responsible for September 11th.
Yes, I wrote this article actually back in April when many more people actually believed that. And now that it's even come out from, I guess, Bush himself, or at least high officials in the government, that was not the case, people still believe it. And I can see that from the hate mail I got in response to this article, where people claim that Hussein was responsible, and we had to get him, and he was Hitler, and all this kind of stuff. So people still believe it.
Which is funny, because even George Bush has admitted that it wasn't. I mean, if Iraq had been responsible for September 11th, wouldn't we have gone to war against Iraq first?
Yeah, why did we go to Afghanistan first? And then I also point out in the article that some of the people in the U.S. government have had plans before September 11th to attack Iraq. And I mentioned specifically the Project for the New American Century, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz. So this attack on Iraq is not just a response to September 11th.
Well,
if it was, you'd think we would have attacked immediately.
Of course. And in fact, the former Treasury Secretary is going to be on 60 Minutes tonight talking about how they were planning on going into Iraq long before, from the first day in office, they were talking about going into Iraq.
Well, the truth is slowly coming out. The problem is so many people just don't want to believe that the government would lie. And yet my opinion would be, if anyone's going to lie, it would be the government, and you shouldn't trust the government, because they continually lie. Just look at all the examples of our foreign wars, how they lie continually, especially presidents. FDR, I will not send your boys to fight in any foreign wars. Wilson, peace, he campaigned his second time on not getting involved in European wars. So presidents habitually lie, and government officials habitually lie, but the American people, I guess, just don't want to believe that.
Well, I mean, what's the problem? It only takes so much evidence that contradicts the official statement. I mean, I got my own short-term memory problems, but it's not that hard to remember the last couple of years and the assertion that Iraq had warehouses full of VX and sarin gas. And I mean, what happened to all the VX and sarin gas? How could anybody not see that for the lie that it was?
Well, people have very short memories, and especially people that just go with the standard news broadcasts, ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC. If that's your only source of news, then you're not getting the whole story at all.
Well, and you write in your article that Iraq has the world's second largest oil reserves, and I guess I take that to mean that you think that's what the true motivation for this war was?
Oh, definitely, just like the first Persian Gulf War. But in the first Persian Gulf War, they even talked about oil more than now. Now they're trying to downplay it because that's the first thing everybody's been thinking of is the oil. And one of the problems is, in the United States, we have oil reserves that the environmentalists have locked up, and we are not allowed to touch them. And that's one reason we're so dependent upon this Middle Eastern oil.
What do you think about all the, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell types and their followers who seem to believe that Islam is a religion of evil and violence and must be defeated, and that you can't blame economic conditions or foreign policy considerations or whatever, that Islam is just evil and we've got to take them on before it's all too late.
Well, as a Christian, I definitely don't see very much merit in the Islamic religion. But I also believe in liberty and freedom, and I don't believe that any religion should be destroyed for any reason. I don't believe in any aggressive warfare like the United States is pursuing right now, unless, of course, you know, self-defense. But this is not a case of self-defense whatsoever.
Well, and I think that's where the line in the spin right there is that, you know, if you and I put it all in terms of sovereign nation states being responsible for this or that, then they would say, okay, well, you're right. It's not self-defense in that term. But if you just lump all of Islam together and you say, well, these terrorists are the radical front of Islam, then it is self-defense against Islam rather than self-defense against a particular nation.
Well, trying to fight against evil is such an ambiguous term. I mean, it's like trying to fight against bad breath. You're never going to stamp out evil in the world. And as I point out in my article, since when is the United States appointed by God to be the policeman of the world and to go around the world destroying evil? Actually, I think, as I point out in the article, we have a lot of evil existing in the United States government. And we have a tremendous threat to our liberties from the United States government, not from governments in Baghdad or some other country halfway around the world that most people couldn't locate on a map.
Well, what about America's obligation to Israel? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I support the nation of Israel having control of their own land. That land was given to them back in Genesis in the Old Testament. But I don't think God needs the United States to help him out. I think God can do what he wants to do and take care of whoever he wants to take care of, and the United States does not need to help God out. That's the problem with many of these religious conservatives.
Wouldn't they just say that that's exactly what God's doing, is helping out Israel by his protege, George Bush, protecting Israel at all costs and that sort of thing?
Well, but I don't think George Bush is not protecting Israel at all costs. These foreign interventions on behalf of the United States are just making things worse. I mean, what was one of the things Osama bin Laden was ranting and raving about? And that's the U.S. had troops in Saudi Arabia that he wanted them taken out. That was an affront to Muslims. So I believe that rather than helping Israel, the United States is making things worse by sticking their nose in these other countries. As you can see from the wars that have been fought in the Middle East since 1948, Israel is perfectly capable of taking care of any aggression on behalf of neighboring countries. So we don't need to stick our nose in, because all that does is cause these countries to hate us. And they don't hate us because we have free speech and we have television and all these things. They hate us because we stick our nose in their business. So we bring much of this on ourselves, and we're going to end up increasing terrorism. We're not going to be helping fight terrorism. We're going to be increasing it.
Well, and that sounds to me like the standard argument for independence, if not isolationism, which I guess is the slander term for independence.
Well, and that's the slander term. The proper term would be non-interventionism. And that's the policy of our founding fathers.
What do you say to a modern Democrat who says, but we should have intervened in Rwanda or Sierra Leone or East Timor, that terrible genocide's happening and America must go and intervene to protect the poor innocent people from their own government?
Well, my response is that the U.S. cannot police the world. We have troops in 138 countries. We're in debt $7 billion.
Trillion.
I should have known that. And when we try to police the world, all we do is make people hate us. We make things worse. We actually have troops right now in 28 African countries at this moment. Plus, and that's sub-Saharan Africa. That's not even North Africa and the Middle East. So we are sticking our nose in all these countries, but we're just very selective as to where we intervene with force, as to where, I guess, we think it's going to help us the most. But the best policy is non-intervention. One of my favorite statements is from Thomas Jefferson, who said, peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. And the best policy for peace is trade with the world and stay out of their business. And that sounds like a very simplistic policy, but if you look at the last 100 years, which has been called a century of war, look at the results of the foreign policy that we did carry out. It was an absolute disaster. Something like 100 million people killed by their own governments in the 20th century. So, in my opinion, we need to practice what's called non-interventionism, which, as you said, is slanderously called isolationism. I don't think we should be isolated at all. I think we should freely trade with any country that wants to trade with us. And that's it. No military alliances, no political connections, as Washington warned against. And that should be our foreign policy.
If you had been the Secretary of State in 2001, and September 11th had happened, what would have been your advice to the president? What would your response have been?
What would my response have been?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I mean, there's got to be a middle ground somewhere between just turning the other cheek and declaring worldwide empire, you know?
Well, one of the problems is the people that committed that atrocity on September 11th are dead. So the question is, were they sponsored by a particular country? And of course the answer is no. Al-Qaeda is not a country. So it's very difficult to respond to something like that. My opinion is that we should take steps to prevent something like that from ever happening. And that is following a policy of non-intervention in other countries.
Right, but let's pretend you just got appointed to be, I don't know, Secretary of Defense or whatever. It was your job to respond after it did happen, and it's too late to get our troops out of Saudi Arabia now. They already struck us. What do we do about something like that without just more intervention and more intervention and make matters worse and create more terrorists, like you say?
Well, you can't do anything until you find out exactly who is responsible. You can't just go bombing Afghanistan and then invading Afghanistan, invading Iraq, and then invading the entire world without some definite evidence. And if no definite evidence comes up, then what you have to do is learn from your mistakes and don't let it happen again. And that may sound cruel, and these unfortunate people that got killed in the Twin Tower attacks, but just going out and bombing people indiscriminately, maybe it makes some Americans feel good that at least we're doing something, but it's better to do nothing than to just go kill more innocent people, in my opinion.
I think I'd have to agree with you.
I mean, how many people that got killed in Afghanistan were responsible for September 11th?
Yeah, maybe a couple with even that. Maybe none.
Correct. But it makes people feel good to see our bombs dropping on these other countries.
Yeah, it just makes me feel wonderful. Oh, goodness.
I mean, it makes me feel sickened.
But you're right, though. I mean, that is the American people's appetite. And
correct.
American people want to see bombs falling on people.
And they watch the news during the day, and they see these great pictures of these smart bombs being dropped, you know, down someone's chimney and blowing them to smithereens. And they think, hey, great, we're responding to September 11th.
You know, it's funny, in Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War, he talks about how there were so few targets in Afghanistan that there were discussions in the National Security Council about, hey, make sure not to use up all the good targets too quick, because, you know, we're going to need pictures of bombs going off for a while now, so try not to blow up everything worth blowing up right off the bat.
And I also read accounts where the government hired public relations firms to help promote the war in Afghanistan. I'm sure the war in Iraq as well. You wouldn't have to do that if the American people were 100% behind something. So it's a big propaganda job by the federal government and the news media to get people to think that Iraq is behind September 11th or Afghanistan or whoever's next.
Very interesting. You know, I think that's going to segue really good into the next interview is the Libertarian Party chairman from Alaska, who's trying to fight conscription in his own little way up there. And like you say, if it was legitimate, they wouldn't need to do all this marketing and whatever gets into it. It's the same sort of thing with conscription, right?
Exactly. I mean, if this country was invaded, physically invaded by another country, everyone would rise up with whatever weapons they had and go to war. That you wouldn't have a propaganda machine, in effect. You wouldn't have to have a draft. But you have to have conscription when you want to send people into foreign wars.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Mr. Vance.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody, Lawrence Vance is a publisher, author, freelance writer, teaches Greek at the Pensacola Bible Institute in Florida, writes for the Mises Institute and LouRockwell.com. And what's your website, sir?
It's VancePublications.com.
Very good. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.